Good evening. Couple of announcements. I promise to make them brief. I hate long-winded announcements. One is to remind you again that you are being taped. You'll pretty much forget about it as we go through the evening. And then Billy downloads them online so that you can have these lectures to go back and refer to. And a number of people have been doing that, and they turn out beautifully with just a little minor editing from Billy. They really are very clear. So I wanted you to know that. I wanted you to know that you have a handout that will give you some information on working with a Pathwork helper. I'm the only Pathwork helper in Pittsburgh. I can take a few, up to 10 hours a week, so you are certainly, when I'm retired, you're certainly welcome to check in with me, and I'll find a way to fit you in, I think. If it's meant to be, it will work out with us. But you can have sessions with people who are at the other centers in Philadelphia and Seven Oaks. For many years in my Pathwork training, I did all of my helpership sessions with people who are out of state, so that does work fine. Anything else, Billy, that I forgot? Oh, yes. And remember that there is obviously, clearly, no charge for this event at all. But we do have to pay rent for this building. So if you feel like kicking a dollar into the basket, it would be great so that we can pay the rent and we don't drain the funds from the board of directors, which we can do if we need to. So I want everyone to pull out your journal. Once again, my board of directors has made sure that I create some sort of experience before every lecture that provides two things. One is a connection among you, and the other is a review of the Pathwork principles. So your first assignment is to free associate, brainstorm, make a note in your journal of all the things that you have come to see so far as Pathwork principles that are working in your life, that are helpful to you in your life. Just make a long list. If you're new to Pathwork, what are some spiritual principles that you live from, that you know of, that are important to you? Just make a list of those. If neither of those operate for you, I was telling one of our new guest members tonight, the wonderful thing about Pathwork is you are welcomed into this space just as you are, without having done your homework, with being afraid, with being anxious, with not wanting to be reach out. All of that is absolutely welcome. So just take a few minutes and write down what comes to your mind that you have so far come to see and understand about Pathwork that's helpful to you, or any spiritual principle. Just make a long list. Now, as I ring the meditation bell, I want you to go up to a person. It doesn't matter whether you know them or not, because you'll have a chance to meet a lot of people, and share one of those principles with that person, and they will share one of their principles with you, or they will say, I have no principles, so I'm here to listen to your principle. Which is welcome. Trust me, it's so embraced and honored and welcomed where you are. We welcome you where you are. When I ring the meditation bell, you will submit the switch and go to the next person, and then you'll cover your next principle, and they will cover theirs with you. Okay, are you ready?
we're to switch every time we hear the bell.
You switch every time you hear the bell. Ready?
Ready.
And you change people each time. Switch to the other person.
Accepting what? Thank you.
seats. So, raise your hand and express one word about what that experience was like for you. Alexander?
Delightful.
Katrina?
Nourishing.
Exciting.
Supportive.
Contactful.
Comforting.
Enjoyable.
Inspirational.
Easy.
Who said that?
Isn't contact a wonderful thing? And we fight it and resist it and yeah. So thank you. I always get the biggest kick on the outside looking in as you engage in these processes. Just the energy and the vitality, and your faces are lit up and you're smiling, and you there's body movement, and it's just really wonderful to watch. So thank you. So before we start the lecture, we're going to do what we usually do, which is to enter a moment of silent meditation. So I invite you to put all your belongings on the floor. Rest your feet comfortably on the floor. Get your body in as comfortable a position as you can. If you can keep your spine straight, it isn't necessary, but it creates a greater opening for your energetic field. And just take a couple of very deep, relaxing breaths and blow it out on the exhale. One more. And let's spend a moment in silence. And when your mind calls you away to its many, many distractions, note it and go back to your breathing. When it calls you away again, note it and go back to your breathing. That's the vehicle for training your mind, training your ability to deal with hard distractions in life when they come, is the ability to let it go and come back to your mind and your breathing. The reason we do that is to have the opportunity to become step by step closer to that in us which is real, which is more real in our minds, our authentic selves, our spirit, sacred, God, everything that is wonderful that lives below the racket in our minds. So every time throughout the day, you have a chance to do that for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, half an hour would be great. It serves that cause, it serves that purpose. Alex, I forgot to make your announcement. Alexander has made a photograph for all the people in the transformation program that will be where, Alexander?
On the table in front of the bulletin board.
A wonderful gift, they're beautiful photographs, thank you very much. And I want to thank you guys for coming out tonight. This is like really amazing. I mean, this is a group of people who is willing to do what it takes. I got a lot of calls, are you canceling? I said, no, there will be a few people there. A few people, we have a room full. And I guess what it means to me personally is that there is something here for you in this material that you don't want to miss. And that inspires me, and it certainly strengthens me in my teaching. So thank you so much for coming out. Even the coffee shops were canceling tonight. I had to pick the coffee and the pastries up early because Amy was closing Datsadora. She said, I can't believe you're going on. I said, yeah, we're going on. I want to say that I think you're going to find your being here really, really worthwhile. This was an amazing lecture for me. I felt transformation occurring as I worked it and studied it and prayed over it. So my expectation is that you're going to be very glad you came because I think it's an amazing, amazing lecture. And I know you think I say that about all of them, but this one really is. Okay. Can't see real well. I'm gonna start bringing a flashlight. So I guess what I want to start with, you don't need to do anything yet. As we look around into life and we peer into the conflicts that are going on in our world, the conflicts that go on between us. We can honestly and accurately say that the source of all of our trouble is the absence of real love. We humans fail miserably at loving ourselves, loving each other, and loving our world. And no one is spared. A lot of people had conversations in my office this weekend about the tragic loss of Seymour Hoffman. Such a talent, such a beloved man, such a human man, and how our tendency is to project into celebrityhood all of our own unfilled longings, unfulfilled longings, never recognizing that they are all dealing from the same pain-filled consciousness that we are dealing with. Celebrityhood, money, status, power, fame doesn't touch it. So, you know, I thought a lot about when I was preparing this lecture, like, how can it be so that we so fail at loving ourselves and each other and the world? When every religious tradition exhorts us to love each other as we would love ourselves, and we're exhorted to love the sacred and the God above all others, every spiritual tradition that I have studied over the course of 40 years teaches us that the cosmos is mostly love and light, and that we ourselves are mostly love and light. So how can this be when we are so pained and confused by our lack of love for ourselves, by our lack of love, experience of love close to us, and by our lack of the world at large, our ability to love the world at large? We see and feel our mean reactivity, our indifference, our numbness, and not knowing what else to do with our yearning to love and be loved, we feel guilty. People will say that in my office as much as anything. I feel so guilty about the meanness in me, the aggravation in me, the hatefulness in me. It's not who I want to be, but it's who I am. We instinctively know that we're in error. But in our unconsciousness, the most loving response we can muster is to feel guilty. That's our misguided attempt to love as best we can, is to feel bad about the fact that we don't love. So the lecture that we're studying tonight is taking a look at what poses of love for us isn't love really, but rather what we think is love toward ourselves is anxious self-preoccupation, and the love that we think we feel toward others is manipulation and attempts to control. That's what we know about love. Yes. Mm-hmm. What poses as love for us isn't really love, but rather that attempt to love ourselves as anxious self-preoccupation, and toward others, it's manipulation and attempts to control. The irony is that we're trying to get from others that which is missing in ourselves, but it's missing in others as well. There ain't nobody here but us chickens, and the sad truth is that we are cut off from our capacity to give and receive love by the condition of being a human being. That's the state of affairs. Okay, Joe. Next one. So love is the greatest power in the universe, and with it we are strong, mighty, safe, connected with all things. And without it, we are weak and afraid and separated and alone. And according to Pathwork, we are largely without love. Not because it does not exist, but because we are blocked, we're cut off from it, we have very little access to it. We have very little access to the love that actually fills us. We're filled with it. And the universe is filled with it. And therefore, we're weak and afraid and separated and alone. That's the condition of our days. Again, how can it be, if there is more love than anything else in us, if we are more loved than anything, which all the spiritual traditions declare, and I happen to assert its accuracy as well. And if there is more than anything else in this universe that we reside in, love, how is it that we're largely without it? Strange, huh? Our desire for love and our lack of it has everything to do with the experiences of our childhood. Great surprise, huh? And so without knowing it, and this is kind of the point of the lecture tonight, we fight off the love that exists. It has always existed, it does exist, and it always will exist. We cannot destroy love. That is our one and only true hope. We can't get so bad, we can't get it so wrong, that we can destroy ourselves, but we can't destroy love. It is there, we are filled with it, and the universe is filled with it, and we're separated from it. I just want you to sit with that for a moment. We're not filled with it. We're not present to it. And there are exceptions. Of course, you know, we're always laughing about how the guy tends to, like, overstate everything. He, she overstates it so we can get it. So I know that there's some exceptions. There are flecks of love that flow into your relationships and your sense of self. But for the most part, no. For the most part, no. So it was in childhood when you first felt the wounds of love's failure from our broken and immature parents, who were failed by their own broken and immature parents, who were failed by their broken and immature parents. And this state of love broken gets perpetuated by the world that we live in. And that's our life. So the reason that we resist love, and you don't have to ask too many questions about this now because this is a developing lecture and it'll all get clear as we go along, is first of all, we resist it because of our childhood pain. We all got hurt because we were loved by immature human beings who either neglected us, deprived us, used us, abused us, ignored us, indulged us, pampered us, overprotected us, for their own self-centered purposes. So we all got wounded in some way or another. And out of that wounding, we created distortions and misconceptions helplessly as children. So we came up with some negative, limiting beliefs and negative attitudes. We created defenses, which are some false ways of taking care of ourselves by either aggressing upon someone or submitting to someone or withdrawing. And finally, because of all of these complications, we lost true touch with true reality. And this is where we're really going to develop this point tonight very powerfully. There's a poem that goes that at the bottom of the way we wish things were, at the bottom of the way we dream things would be or should be, at the bottom of how we think things should be, is the way that things are. And that is the only security that is available in the universe. So one of our greatest wounds is our inability and our refusal to deal with reality. So we have become cut off from reality as reality is, just the way things are, and we have become cut off from the flow of the inevitable, forever, eternal, invincible, immortal love that lives within us and that we swim in the universe. This unhealed child is still alive and well within us and has tremendous power to influence and direct our lives. From our childhood pain and defenses, we have developed many strategies to try and get the love that we've missed out on and we're separated from. The strategy that we're working on tonight is the strategy of submission. So in terms of the strategy of submission, and we'll develop this as we go along, the child in us fears rejection and defeat. The child in us who is alive and well concludes that his or her well-being and survival is dependent upon someone's love or admiration. The misconception that we live with is, I can't take it. If you don't love me, if you don't go along with me, if you don't admire me, if you don't agree with me, I can't take it. Now, that's not an intellectual process. We know that that's not true. It's an emotional process, and so we act like we can't take it. We can. But the misconception is, if I'm not loved, admired, wanted, and the way I want to be, I can't stand it. My survival is dependent upon it. And so the child in us tries to convince others to love us according to our childish concepts and wishes. We try to extract it from other people. The child wants complete surrender, all wishes met, to be loved perfectly all the time, and to reign supreme. So obviously, if I analyze this for you from an intellectual process, which I just did, you would say, that's ridiculous. I don't think that. I don't think that at all. and we don't. But what we're talking about is an unconscious process where we feel that. Our emotional reactions show us, tell us that we feel that. We get very upset when we don't get our own way. We feel rejected. And we feel very threatened if someone doesn't like us. So what's the implication? I'm not okay if you don't like me. I'm not okay if you don't admire me. I'm not okay if you don't go along with me. That is our emotional reality. So we operate emotionally in our relationship and in our lives as if this is true. And it doesn't work, by the way. So the truth is, submissive love is immature love, but we will rationalize it as good and unselfish and sacrificial. I will sell myself out, make you the center of my universe, give up all that I want so that you can have what you want because I'm such a loving, quote, Christian person. This is what I was taught to do. But the truth is, it's actually self-centered. Because what we're trying to do is to convince the other person to love you so you can get the love that you demand. That's the truth. And it works the other way, which is, you may be the one who's doing the submitting, or you may be the one who wants to be submitted to. So if you submit to me, if you give me what I want, if you make me the center of my universe, I'm loved. That is the other distortion. That's not love. That's manipulation. That's games. That's what Freud meant when he talked about how love is an addiction and how love is a dependency. This is what Freud was talking about. So if we're submitting, we rationalize our behavior as being loving and being good, when in fact it's a manipulation and is true love's proxy. It isn't true love, it's the proxy of true love. So again, some of you may be thinking, I don't submit. I stand up for myself 3/4 of the time. But listen to this. This is the stunning reality. What we're standing up for is we're mad that that other person isn't submitting to us, isn't approving of us, isn't admiring us, isn't treating us the way we want to be treated. So it's the same thing. We think we're standing up for ourselves. I'm really standing for myself. I'm so proud. But what we're doing is implying the demand that you have to be there for me and the way I need you to be, for me to be okay and to be safe. That's the illusion. So the fallout from this pseudo-solution, and this is kind of the clincher for the lecture for me, the fallout of this false strategy is that it creates our fear of loving. So if love means submission and domination to get the love that you instinctively want, that's a terrifying thing. Yeah? Mm-hmm. If you have to sacrifice yourself to get love, because love means slavish emotional submission, means giving up autonomy and will to another, means willing something can make it happen, i.e. the forcing current. That's what the child thinks. If I will it, I will it. I force it, I force it. I demand it. I'm going to get it. Okay. All right, Joe.
Maybe that last point.
If I expect slavish submission, giving up of autonomy and will to, who wants that? Who the hell wants that? To sit with that for a moment. Is that what you want? And again, this all operates at an unconscious level. So I'm not really going to open up to love. That would be deadly. I have to give myself away. I'll shy away from love. It's too scary. I will dismiss the love that comes my way. It's too dangerous. And this is all unconscious. We don't know that we are frightened of love because of this pseudo-solution that we have created, that love is submitting and manipulating and is actually a game that we play. We're terrified of love, but we do not know it, and certainly we do not know why. But Mother, Father, God is good. God, with the creation of universal laws, takes care of us. The truth of these laws of love and beingness are planted within us instinctively. And while dimly, they do shine through our foxes. So that the psyche knows the truth. We know that manipulated love is not real. Yeah? We cannot respect or trust ourselves, the self, for even seeking it. We can't trust that the other person will deliver it, and if they do, we can't receive it as real. So we can't take it in. We know we've manipulated it. So if we cannot love and respect the self and trust the other, how can you surrender to love fully? So from the submission distortion, the ability to trust our own judgment is lost. We cannot discern if this person or this situation calls for a response of love or not. So in false love, we are always frightened, uncertain, and insecure. And you know, I love this word, and we're very, very wobbly. So we live with a terrible dilemma. We hopelessly long for love. This was planted in our being by God. And we cannot escape it, really, and yet we're equally afraid of it. How many of you can identify that you long and you're frightened? Right. Yes. We long and we're terrified. And we're terrified because of our own concoction. The human being concoction that we've learned. Okay, John. So deep down, our soul instinctively yearns to be loved and to love in the full, real, encompassing, universal way. But there is that other part of us, the childish, that sabotages this rightful demand of our soul and seeks control and security by manipulating love. So I just want you to sit with that for a moment. Just read it, reflect upon it, breathe into it meditatively for a moment. And our soul, that true, true part of us that longs to be loved and to love in the true, universal, encompassing way, is thwarted and it clamors to be heard. And the way we experience this clamoring is that we feel like there's something missing in our lives. There is some vague, aching, unnamed discontentment. But we never know what it is that is wrong. We just know that there is something essential missing. We feel a soul whole. And we attempt to fill it, and it won't be filled with money, possessions, power, status, substances, and false love. So let's unpack and destructure this pseudo-solution a bit. Exactly how do we live out the pseudo-solution, the pseudo-submission strategy? Either submitting or expecting others to submit to us, remembering that at all times, what exists underneath our strategy is this precious longing for real love. So how do we just sabotage our longing for love? First, we demand that you love me, admire me the way I want to be loved and admired. And this may be outwardly demanding. Those people tend to get blamed for it more than the rest of us. But it can be just as powerfully, subtly, internal. And the energy is there and the world feels it. So we use a forcing current. When we are upset that someone does not approve of us, admire us, agree with us, go along with us, we are subtly demanding submission. And I can tell you honestly, I never thought of that. I never understood that before this lecture. When we are making those demands, we are subtly demanding that people submit to us. So we create unreal, unworkable, hazardous situations, forcing others to submit by trying to correct, change, fix others rather than accepting what is, and making our own decision regarding how we want to be a part of it or not. We're always trying to fix other people so we can feel more comfortable in the situations that we're in. The other thing that we do is we have this yearning for the love in our soul, the longing, and we want the perfect love, but we want it all now or we don't want any of it at all. All or nothing is the child. I can't have the perfect situation or the perfect love, I'll just withdraw completely. The guide says that there are great dramatics when it doesn't work. Weeping, wailing, gnashing of teeth. If the great drama of love and perfection can't be, we withdraw altogether. So as we follow these strategies, openly or internally, subtly, we fail to love. So we cannot love. And our inability, therefore, to love causes immaturity. And immaturity causes unreality. And unreality is untrue, so it causes us to create situations and unreal love which do not work. And we deny and pretend what is so. And so we don't have to face and give up our demand and our will. We don't want to see the unreality. And this causes conflicts, fear, darkness, and ignorance. And all of this causes us to stay young, like a child, in our understanding of ourselves, others, and the world. As one of my teachers said, little children are driving the bus. So let's go over this again. Our inability to love causes immaturity. Immaturity causes unreality, not being able to see reality and life as it really is. Unreality is untrue. So this causes us to create unreal situations, unreal relationships, and love which do not work. But we don't want to see this unreality because the child wants what it wants and the way it wants it. And this causes conflicts, fear, darkness, and ignorance. We thwart the love that we long for. We're like gerbils on a wheel, whether we are isolated and alone or whether we're in a relationship. And we're living in the pain and the frustration of the vicious loop of unfulfillment, and we're crying out. If only we were to be brave enough to choose courage, to give up our childish demand for love, admiration, approval, and agreement.
Okay. Give me your next one. What do you have next? Okay, that's where I am. If we're willing to give up our conscious, childish demand that you love me, approve of me, admire me, agree with me, then we become willing and able to see what is rather than seeing made-up reality. We can discriminate intelligently then whether the situations we're in are good for us or not. We can even determine, can love possibly live here? Because we've given up our demands. Probably most importantly, we can respect ourselves for ability to give up something that we want fully without hostility. We've given up the demand. And then we can be able to see what the situation is or who the person is without overestimating because of our forcing current or making them better than they are or worse than they are because of our forcing current. We can now see more clearly if we have given up our demands. And then we will start to be able to recognize the childish demands of others for your love, your admiration, or your agreement, and be uninfluenced by it. Because you can see more clearly now. You've given up the demand. You've given up it has to be that way. And so you won't be obliged to give in or feel guilty for not doing so. And then you will see that another kind of love can be given, which will be detached in character, rather demanding. What on earth could that kind of love be, and how on earth would it look? It is unfathomable to us, although our hearts long for it. Lest you think that this doesn't apply to you because you're either not in a relationship, you have lost hope that you ever will be, or you don't want to be, the submission strategy is pervasive and it's in all of us at all times. It's all around you. The demand that your spouse or partner meet your expectations. The demand that your adult children be who you want and you need them to be. The demand that your friends and colleagues function according to your demands. The demand that the authorities in your life meet your demands for the good parent. It is subtle that in all these cases we are expecting that others submit to our demands in order for us to be okay and feel safe. We may act it out in our behavior or be yanked around by it internally. It is to be in denial regarding reality to not see this. And remember, when we give up demanding reality to be what we wish it to be, think it should be, there is reality in its beautiful rawness, and that is the only security available on the planet. So the new truth is that only as we learn to gradually grow and learn to face and accept that which is in our everyday lives and emotions will we lose our fear of loving. Accepting reality as imperfect and unpleasant as it is. Accept that people do not feel about you as you wish. This apparent imperfection in your reality exists. And this sets a benign chain reaction in motion rather than a vicious loop of pain and frustration. And once we have committed to this and tended, tasted, then what do we do with all of that energy of trying to fix, correct, change others to meet our demands for love and admiration and approval and agreement? This is how we think we take care of ourselves. The possibility. I love this. Perhaps it is most appropriate simply to give simple respect and affection to all. What on earth does that mean? Simple respect and affection to all. We're all in the same boat. We all were formed and developed false strategies, and so we're all lost. Each of us is on our own soul's journey, and it has its own dignity of wounds and our strategies. We respect each person's capacity to turn to the light and find his or her own way. We all suffer. We're all vulnerable. We all want and need love, and we all long. So we all deserve simple respect and admiration. Now that we have given up our demands for love and our fear of love, what will be our motivation and our guide? How will we find our way? And the guide says it's through our intuition. Our intuition is the highest sense perception that exists for us. Some people say that intuition is our channel to God, and the guide teaches that our intuition is our channel to our higher self. All instinctual, natural knowing lives in our intuition. Instinctual knowing, awareness, and consciousness as distinct from reasonable, rational knowing. In rational knowledge, we're processing data to come to a conclusion or understanding. In intuition, we're tuning in. We're tuning into an automatic, natural, spontaneous knowing. So these are the characteristics of intuition. First of all, it's not 100% accurate because we are not yet 100% free of our barriers and our blocks. It requires us to reckon with, I don't know, I'm not sure, I'm seeking, I'm looking. It means realizing, I may be wrong, I could be wrong about this, we'll have to see. We cannot lean on our intuition with blind certainty and confidence. But when we consult it without the forcing current or without wishful thinking, it holds great potentials, and it has some limitations. Intuition promotes openness. Intuition is a rich, fruitful resource. Intuitive truth thrives in not knowing. I don't know. I'm looking. I'm seeking. I'm searching. I'm sensing. I'm feeling into, I don't know. Intuitive truth is flexible. So our intuition is rich and powerful, but not perfect because we are always dealing with partial consciousness and partial freedom. But this is the good news. As we resolve our blocks, our intuition becomes more available. Until then, we can settle for, and I love this, its hints, its glimmers, its mutterings, its whisperings. But we must seek it. We must turn to it to get our deepest, fullest, most true, natural, instinctual knowing that doesn't live in our minds. We think it does. But it doesn't. So what are the blocks to our intuition so that we can go to work to detect them so that they can become dismantled? Let's get back to the child that runs the bus, that drives the bus. The undetected child in us wants to know with certainty. I want to know what's right, and I want to know now. Tell me. The undetected child is afraid of the unknown. It's terrified if it doesn't know. The child wants rules to lean upon. Tell me what to do. Tell me what's right. And the child in us wants to avoid the self-responsibility of searching, exploring, trying, testing. The other block to intuition is our inability to distinguish between real love and weak submission. And the lack of trust in self and others because we lack the courage to view other persons and situations as they are, without our judgment, without our exaggeration of their goodness or their badness. And the greatest cure and antidote and correction and healing of the block to intuition is the courage to see and accept reality as it is, not as we demand it to be, not as we wish it were, not as we think it should be, but as it is. When we can do that, this is how it is for me here. This is how it is for me here. Then we have softened the block so that our intuition can begin to open and can guide us in its greater and greater truth. So the courage to see what is rather than what you want to see heightens intuition, discrimination, awareness, and therefore self-respect. To see will cultivate understanding so that when the right situation or the right person is at hand, there will be no need to have to fear loving. So what's our way out? The way out is to apply the great concepts of universal truth about love in your practical everyday life now. Remember, all human beings deserve affection and respect. We let go of our self-centeredness little bit by little bit through painstaking and diligent analysis of our false ways of submission. We learn to love and respect even though you don't get what you want from the person that you're demanding it of. And before truly learning to love others, we have to learn to like and respect them. Okay. So how do we learn to like and respect others? To begin with, you find inside where you do not do so. Find out where you don't like, where you don't respect, and be truly honest with yourself and with compassion. Experience how you deviate from real love. Be able to see it, be able to name it, be able to own it, and let go of your shame about it. Let go of your feeling of badness about it. Just let yourself see how you deviate from real love. Find your unspoken expectations and demands in relationship to other people, in relationship to the world. Find them. See them. And I love this one. Reason with the child within. Teach the child that submission has nothing to do with real love. Nothing to do with real love. Help the child understand that real love doesn't mean giving up dignity or self-government and freedom. And when we can give up the childish idea of how others should love us, we will not fear loving others. Those two go hand in hand. One of our childish attitudes is that we want it all now. We lack the patience for the organic development and growth and movement of life. Yes, you may have to live with your longing longer. Let it fester. Let it deepen. Let it ripen. Let it soften you, as Hafiz would say, the Sufi poet. Our tendency is to want to yank the plant out of the ground and eat the fruit even though it's not yet ripe. I like this part too. What does growing maturity look like? We can only reach the final fulfillment of the love that we all yearn for by starting on the lower first steps of the ladder, one rung at a time, and get this, we can't skip a step. Can't skip a step. We have to start where we are and take the next step and then the next step and then, but what do we want to do? We want to start from here and jump over to this great, ultimate, all-encompassing love. We want to acquire the genuine ability to allow people to feel about you exactly as they do and as they wish. They are allowed. They are allowed. And to let go of our hostility if our demands are not met. Doesn't mean deny the hostility. It just means don't buy into it. To give up the subtle forcing current of trying to make people feel about you, think about you, see you, admire you, agree with you, collude with you in the way that you want them to. So rather than focusing on ultimate love, which you aren't really ready for, pay attention to the degrees of love, the steps, the different kinds of love, the variations that we're all capable of receiving now. This is real. And will be steps to the ultimate love that you long for. And the guide says, and it feels true to me, I resonate with it, that we will all get there eventually. We're on our way. We'll all get there eventually. Now, it freaks people out when I say maybe not in this lifetime, but eventually. You know, so when I feel my most despairing, I think, well, you know, this is okay. I get to take that next step. Eventually, I'll have the deep longing of my soul, and so will you. And there's something about that that is very consoling and hopeful and encouraging. So this means with our friends, our spouses, our colleagues, our children, our supervisors, our supervisees, our clients, our patients, as we do this work, take those inexorable steps in lovingness, which means granting respect and affection to every human being that you meet. Because they've suffered in the same way you have suffered. They have put strategies in place just like you did. They are vulnerable and they yearn for love just the way you do. They suffer just the way you do. And therefore, they are worthy of your affection and your respect. The promises. The guide says that the tight band around our bodies and our minds and our souls and our spirits will begin gradually to dissolve when you allow others to be free to be who they are and feel the way they feel, even if it hurts us, scares us, disappoints us. We'll learn to like and respect others as human beings without having to possess his or her love, admiration, or agreement. We will be able to see, observe, sense, feel what is true, and not merely believe what you wish were true or what you want to be true. You will gracefully learn affection and respect for others who thwart your will. You will refrain from constructing unreal situations which obstruct your view of reality. I don't know how we got mixed up here. You will accept reality. Your intuition will grow more reliable. You will trust in your trust in yourself will increase. The ability to surrender love will expand. You will experience life as a fuller, more alive each moment. You will become aware of self and others in a way that you never thought possible. So I'm going to take a break here to see where you are, what you're thinking, how this is landing with you, what questions it raises for you, what you're getting, what you're not getting. Yes?
So the people that appear to be in relationship with one another, that look truly to be, that they love each other, you know, we never know what goes on behind closed doors, but what we see and what we know about close friends that seem to have very rich relationships, you know, are we really saying that in effect those aren't? It's kind of nervy now. I mean, in a way, I get your point. I get the point of this, but I'm saying it does exist on some level, I would assume, that all of the world is not really in a fake love thing. They're either in a demand or submission thing.
Yeah, we are.
We are.
We are.
There you go. Okay.
And not that we can't have effective in some ways functional life based on that model. But it's not the love that we yearn for. And that's not to say that, you know, the guy talks a lot about some of us came in with, you know, higher self capacities and different traits everywhere, and they can be different with each other. So there is love that, you know, real love that leaks in, but no, this is basically how we are and what we are in need of recovery from. Yeah. Yes.
Well, earlier, and I thought this when I read the lecture, talking about, you know, that manipulative relationship, it made me think of codependency, because I used to submit to someone in an effort to, you know, show them that they were good by loving them, whatever, you know,
trying to get the love back,
yeah, to be perfect to them. But it's hard to see that once you realize that and you see it, that like...
Check out your life the past couple of weeks.
Okay.
How much of the time were you running around doing, saying, acting in ways to get people to like you, respect you, honor you, appreciate you? I mean, it's fundamental to our structure. Mad if they don't. Threatened if they criticize you. That's how we are. And only something else becomes available when we see that that's how we are and admit it and own it with compassion. Then there's an opening so that the love that's really in there in us can begin to infuse us. But we have to do it again and again and again. It's not like we do it once and we're fixed and we're done. Yes.
So, if you're in a situation, somebody acts in a way that hurts your feelings, and you recognize that, but, like, we don't have control over them.
Right.
We don't want to submit to them, but there's someone close to us. Is there room in a healthy way to, let's say, like, that hurt me?
Sure.
And then... like, you can't do anything about it.
Right, absolutely. We can let each other know how we impact it. Absolutely. That's intimacy. Yes. Yes.
This is, it's enlightening, but my confusion is it assumes or it infers that one would know true love if one encountered it.
You would. You would and you do. How many of you have had moments of true love, of being truly connected with another person, with life, with source, with God? How many have had moments? You know it when you have it, right?
But
is that what we live from?
But there's a second part to my question.
Yes.
That feeling of true love could also be the child in you being fulfilled. Mm-hmm. It could be a misconception.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is true. So you have to learn, you know, discernment and reality, which is a lot of what this lecture is about.
I think discernment's a key word. Yes.
Yeah. Somebody else? Okay.
Well, so the promises are fleeting?
The promises, well, who was it? It's probably someone in this room who said to me, either in a session or somewhere, you know, I thought that, okay, I got conscious, I got aware, I took responsibility for that, and I thought, oh, I'm home free, I'm done now. But then we have to do it the next day, and the next day, and the next day. Because the power of this structure, the condition of being human, is so fixed and pervasive. You know? It's not like there's ever permanent recovery. It's like, we recover moment by moment by moment by moment by moment by moment again and again, which is why studying our lectures is important, why meditation is important, why prayer is important. We're contending with this human structure and its compulsions constantly, but it's what we're here to transform. Yes, Billy?
Isn't that sort of part of the fun of it? I mean, my relationship is kind of a roller coaster, but, you know, I don't think you have the highs without the lows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. You know, another way of saying it is, it's like the swing between beingness and non-beingness, and beingness and non-beingness. But we can't get to beingness unless we can own and allow the structure and the self-centeredness of the non-beingness, you know? So.
So the thing that was running through my mind was a little bit on the, I think on the way Leslie was going here a minute ago, there was this idea of if you really aren't a path worker, you know, which I'm sure there are a few people, though most everybody I know is, but if you don't have a sense of whether your intuition is really, you know, you have this feeling, your attraction, there's, you know, the feeling, like almost as if it's just a lustful moment or a feeling of in love or love. Are you saying that you know, if you're in touch with your higher self might educate you into saying that's really you have another motive here. That's not really love. But your child can and does fool you. I mean, it does.
That's what this work is about: is recovering the child. Yes.
So
detecting and growing up the child.
So do you think at times like that, though, that there is a voice within everyone that says, I don't know, but then you still behave in a certain way?
I think so, you know, according to the guide and certainly my experience, that truth is always knocking at our door, usually in a quiet way. You know, we know when we are, and when we say manipulating love, that sounds like much more pejorative than what it is. We give love to get love. But in some way, we know that there's something off about it. You know, like that higher self, that deeper truth in us is always whispering, and it's always muttering, and it's always hinting, and it's always pecking at our door. Yes.
I would like to respond. I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, I sort of went on a concerted effort to build my intuition. And so the way that I did it was to try to tune in and listen and get a sense of where to go as many times as I could remember to do it. And oftentimes it wasn't so much that there were voices, or it didn't take place intellectually. It was more like paying attention to what happened next, and learning that I had some felt experiences of what, oh, this is what it's like when I'm being impulsive, or this is what it's like when my child's making that decision. This is what it feels like when it's my higher self. And so it's sometimes it's just a sensory knowing that comes from just connecting the consequences. And so I think if you're trying to build your intuition, but you're looking for all of your knowing to be in your head, you end up missing half of the picture.
Right.
It's not always intellectual, but
it usually isn't.
For me, it just took, and I'm not saying I'm done with it by any means, but it was just a concerted effort to just act on what I felt and then pay attention to what happened back. So it's like a study, sort of.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good relationship with intuition and really fits with what the guide is saying in this lecture. It isn't perfect and it isn't true 100% of the time, and you can't lean on it 100%, but you work with it. You develop it and you remove the box to it. But it's the highest, potentially the highest sense perception that we have for instinctual knowing to guide us into our evolution. You know, it's not this. It is not this. Yes. Other questions, comments? Yes.
Well, this really you said something that made this really click with me. And it's a lot like, you know, working a program or working the steps, and that, like, you're always a recovering alcoholic. It's not like you get to some place and it's like,
and you're done.
I'm free forever, you know, just like that actor. It's like he wasn't working it and somehow he got miserably lost. And it's kind of, that's what you're saying. You have to try to build this awareness and pay attention.
You have to call yourself back to it again and again.
Yeah.
It's not like you get your child handled forever. So.
Right.
And I've said to so many of you that our motivations are almost always mixed, and so we want to check out, and I hear a lot of you saying this now. It's like, I feel like my child is here all the time. That's right. And checking it out, and what is it saying, and how is it driving us, and what is it demanding? And then we know to help that part of us rather than automatically follow its program. Because it just wants what it wants, when it wants it, and the way that it wants it, and the form that it wants it, now. That's all it wants. Other comments or questions?
What I'm finding is the more I, I don't want to say work, because it doesn't really feel like work, it's just exercise every day, it's coming back to, and when you talk about starting from the bottom of the ladder,
yeah.
The bigger the relationship, the scarier it is. So I start with, let's say, my colleagues. And it used to be we have a company inside of about 20. And I used to be the one that would go around, what can I help you with? What? Let me do that for you.
Let me get your love. I need it. I have to have it to survive.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I know that one well.
I demand that you love me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm in a place where that was futile. I hit my head against the wall enough times to know. And when you said, I can respect somebody without really, I don't want to be their best buddy.
Right.
And I know there are people that, I know there are people that we would not be friends outside of that work relationship. And I respect that.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way. So it's sort of freeing in that way. So it's like this relationship that I have in my workplace is actually a great teaching tool to build toward my bigger relationships. So I can try things on and see what
works. Great.
But very next day, like we just said, the very next
day, do it again.
If there's a hint of criticism from somebody, I'm like, off the chart. And then I have to come back. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's back to
the one of the things that the guide says about that feeling that we have when we feel criticized or disagreed with or not admired or not loved is that that feeling that we have does not match the reality of the situation. That we have to learn that. That feeling is telling us, this is crucial, this is important. And the guide says that feeling is misleading us. It isn't. No. Yes?
Thinking that probably one of the most intense emotions we have is fear, and the child in us convinces us that love can fill that void of fear. And unfortunately, we we envision this love that's going to fill that void on our terms, on our terms.
That's exactly right, Leslie. And you know what can fill that void? There is something.
Yourself, right?
Yourself in what? The true love that is in us. If that is liberated, we are eternally safe and secure and whole. It's getting to it. And that's what this work is all about, is the getting to it.
So I hate to belabor this point.
That's okay.
I think I'm not getting it. Did you notice this?
That's all right. You have to struggle with it.
So the word detachment that you used earlier, mm-hmm. is that just detachment from either submission or the demand?
It's detaching from our demand that you give me what I want, you feel for me the way I want you to feel for me. It's detaching from that. I want your attention. I want your love. I want you to like me. But my sense of well-being is not tied up in it. Well, that's giving up the demand.
But it doesn't
it's not giving up the desire. It's giving up the demand.
Because at some point there has to be, wouldn't there be some need to fulfill some...
That's desire. That's not demand.
Desire.
If you get it, it's great. If you don't, you say ouch and let go. But you're okay. It's the attachment to the demand.
Yeah.
That's the child.
Yeah.
Okay, next slide. So finally, the forces of creativity, intuition, perceptiveness, and growth, I love this, will unfold in you, which will give you a stronghold and unsurpassed true security. When we give up the demand that something outside of us is going to make us whole, it's going to save us, it's going to secure us, it's going to fulfill us. And the last slide. So, it's important that we pray to our intuition, that we pray for help and insight and guidance to detect the false submissive love that's within us. And we may direct our desires to the depths of ourselves because, after all, God lives inside of you. So Barbara's going to close with a meditation.
Well, I'm hoping that, like me, all of you have a situation come up in your mind, or a person, a relationship, possibly even your relationship with yourself, that this really spoke to. And we are going to use prayer and some meditation now, to just begin to open us up, to loosen up a bit our demand in the situation or in the relationship. So first of all, if you get comfortable as you can, both feet on the floor, take some deep, relaxing breaths. Really bring yourself present to your breath. Let your breath then carry your awareness into your body, into yourself. As you breathe, imagine your breath penetrating all of your limbs, every cell in your body. Just allow your breath to really bring you home to yourself. Let any tension you're feeling drop away with each exhalation. And now just allow to arise in you the relationship, a situation, a person, an aspect of yourself with which you feel some conflict, which feels uneasy for you. See if you can name what it is you want to be different. What is it you want from the person, from the situations that isn't there? Just see if you can identify an expectation that is not being met, or a demand, something you really want, is really important to you, before you can feel okay. For openness and the willingness to loosen, to just loosen a bit your demand in this situation, your expectation. To come in with regard to this situation. See if you can be patient regarding when help will come, when you have the insight you need. How willing are you to wait? And if impatience is here, we pray for the willingness to become more patient. Allow your willingness for this situation to be different, for you to loosen. Allow that to just penetrate beyond your mind. Feel it as best you can with your breath, as if you're breathing willingness into every cell in your body, to the depths of your soul. Let your soul know you are willing. You're willing to loosen your grip, to loosen the tightness, to relax in the situation. And express your gratitude for the help that you are already receiving by your openness and your willingness to ask. and thank yourself for coming here tonight, for this loving gesture on your part, for being part of a community in which you are getting help and support, and acknowledge that this is a way of giving love to yourself. Gradually bring your awareness back to the room, to the people on either side of you. Open your eyes and look around. And safe driving to all. Safe journey.